All right, so we are in this handout, this overview of the Bible. It's a dispensational chart, but it emphasizes Matthew 24 and some questions on it. But if you want to just look at the screen, and we know that 2 Peter 3:8 says that a day with the Lord is as a thousand years, and a thousand years are as a day. Earlier in that chapter of 2 Peter, it talks about scoffers who say that all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. So I believe in context of 2 Peter 3 that the context is about the creation when he says a day with the Lord is as a thousand years. And we believe God created the earth in seven literal days. You know, on day one, he said, let there be light. And we know that day six, he created man. So so he created in seven literal days. But we also believe that there will be about a 7,000 year period of man upon the earth. So that's kind of the big picture of this graphic that you have. And Jim, I'm sure others of you might know better than me, but there was a Catholic man named Bishop Usher, and he's kind of famous for his chronology of the Bible. And so I actually did this once myself. It's fairly easy from some of the chapters in the Bible that this guy was this many years old and he had this son and he lived this much longer. And so you can kind of add up all those dates. And what you get is it's believed that Adam and Eve were in the garden around 4,000 years before Christ. He dates it at 4004 BC, BC being before Christ. And there's another chart I'll show you in a minute. It dates it just a little different, but I wanted you to think about that. But we know that in Genesis 1:1 it says in the beginning, and we look at that, and that was the beginning of what? Well, it was the beginning of time for one thing, and that's when God created the heaven and the earth. But this church places the fall of Satan shortly after God created everything, and he took a third of the angels with him, and we've talked about that. But then we end up in Genesis chapter 3, where God created Adam and Eve, and we call that a dispensation. And you know, if we go in the bathroom here, there's a soap dispenser. It dispenses soap. And so when we think of dispensations, this is how God dispenses grace, or he dispenses his dealings with man. So that's kind of how I think of when I think of dispensation. And we say that it's a dispensation of innocence because Adam and Eve were created innocent. They didn't have the knowledge of good and evil, but it was only good. They were God's children, and they created him, and then Eve was created from man. And but it wasn't long. We don't know how long, and this is only my speculation. Was at most 3.5 years. He's the first man. Christ is called the last Adam, and he ministered for 3.5 years. So I just speculated that he lived there for 3.5 years before he died, or before him and Eve sinned. But it could have been day two. It could have been one day. So the Bible really doesn't say, but he was innocent. But this is where we put a division. We said rightly dividing the word of truth. So we would put a division here, and all that division means is things before Adam sinned are different than they are after he sinned, right? Before he sinned, he was made in God's image. Well, now he's starting to have children, and it says that Seth was born in Adam's image and after Adam's likeness. So does everybody see the division that it's called? We call it the fall of man. They partook of the forbidden fruit, and the day they did, they died. And so it's the That's okay. Does everybody see kind of the division? That's these are all. These are all F word. The fall of man, the flood of Noah. So all these divisions that we're going to talk about are kind of all F words. And we put there being seven dispensations. And you know, you could almost say you could almost make a dispensation out of some other things. And we would even put, you know, this tribulation period we put under the Old Testament law because we see some connection with the law. So, but you could make a dispensation of tribulation, I guess, if you wanted. So, anyway, I wanted to point that out as we go along here. But this is one of the larger, I guess maybe the largest dispensation. We call it the dispensation of conscience. And I don't know if you ever heard, had anybody say, you know, let your conscience be your guide. And that's maybe not a bad thing because we've all got a kind of a conscience that it's kind of a right and wrong barometer.
Yeah, but that could be a bad thing too.
Yeah.
It's all about your emotions. And, mm-hmm. You know.
Well, in the last days, people are said to have a seared conscience. Like, so you can't trust your conscience because
what's seared?
Well, like it's like fried. Your conscience is fried.
Well, like sear, like when they're doing certain.
They cauterize.
Yeah, there you go.
So they cauterize. They won't have a conscience.
Well. Well, what I think about that is when police officers see frightening experiences,
they get a little immune to it.
They get a little immune to it, yeah.
Mm.
So that's what it means, like, to be seared.
And
makes you not think
some people that just
bad.
If all they know is lies, then that's probably not the best person, you know, to tell you the truth. They have a seared, so they're tainted. They're,
it's like when people tell you to follow your heart. That's really not
yeah.
Statement.
But in other words, God didn't have His written word at this time, and so you know, they didn't have a Bible here. So they did, but I mean, they had some examples. They saw Adam and Eve, you know, they sacrificed, you know, God killed the animals to make them clothes of animal skins. And so there are some examples from Adam and Eve that they know to do or not do. But after 1600 years of this, and we know in Genesis 6 that the sons of God cohabitated with the daughters of men, and it says in Genesis 6 that the thoughts of their heart was only evil continually, like they never had a good thought. So like we're saying here, Tracy, that in the end days, people are going to have a seared conscience. Well, they got that here too. They you do wrong long enough, and that's all you know to do. And
yeah.
So it was only evil continuing. So God brought about this worldwide flood, and that is one of the things we're going to talk about today. Is, you know, as the days of Noah, so shall the Son of Man be. So it had never rained on the earth. You know, in the garden, there was a mist that came up and watered the earth. So we believe that the earth was tropical here. And maybe even, you know, they found, you know, like sea fossils on tops of mountains, you know, because of the flood. And but anyway, we think it was more of a tropical paradise. But after the flood, you know, that's why we say rightly dividing. We're going to make a division here around Genesis 7, 8, and 9 when the flood happened. Because things after the flood are not like they were before the flood. So after the flood, we call this a dispensation of human government, because God says, if any man kill someone, then their life should be taken for shedding the blood of another human. So God kind of implements capital punishment. He's like, if somebody kills another person, they should be killed. And so that's partly why we say human government, because, you know, Adam or Noah and his family should begin to judge these things.
Yeah, the thing is, though, like, I used to never think this was possible before I went to jail. People change while they're in there.
Yes.
They know God, and they're not the same people.
Right.
They have more.
Right. So. Right. That's why it's called the Department of Corrections. The goal is to make corrections for people to have a change of heart.
They don't always do that.
Right. Nope. Not always. And
the only ones that I believe that honestly people aren't so unfair are pedophiles. I'm not like the two little kids. Mm-hmm. I believe that there is no, somewhere in the Bible it says, if you harm a child and cause them to sin, which that would be it, don't even look at me. Mm. You're the same as a non-believer.
Yeah, it's better than to hang.
The way I saw that as, you can't be saved, your soul's gone.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's really no sin that God can't forgive.
I'm going to find the verse.
But yeah.
You sound like,
no.
I mean, people still could be saved from that.
I don't think from that particular one, because for one, I just don't think so. And a lot of them, they can't not, you know.
It's like a murderer, though. I mean
if they turn back to it, both of them don't. So I'm talking about the ones that don't.
Well, and so after 400 some years of this, and I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but so people had long life up to here. And let me go to this other chart here. This will be interesting to you if I can. So this is a longevity chart, and it shows, you know, Adam lived 930 years. It looks like Seth lived 912 years. And I think there ended up being seven people that lived over 900 years. And you can see Enoch here, the man that walked with God. God took him, and he was not. He translated him. So Enoch is a type of the rapture, and he is the seventh from Adam. I don't know if you can see that. This one, two, three, four. Okay, seven. Yeah. Oh, one, two, three, four, five. So he's the seventh from Adam. And then after him was Methuselah, and Methuselah is the oldest man that ever lived. And he died the year of the flood, 969. And I think his name means like when gone, it shall come. So some people think Enoch's son Methuselah, like Methuselah's name embodied something that made Enoch, you know, walk with God. But Noah himself was 600 years old when the flood occurred, but he lived another 300, and he lived to be 950. So Noah lived a long time after the flood, was my point there. And then I wanted you to see that you know, would it have been I guess Abraham could have known Noah, couldn't he? Abraham, this is kind of cool, because most of us know that Israel became a nation again in 1948, right? But you probably didn't know that Abraham was born 1948 years after Adam. So, you know, the first Jew, Abraham, was born in 1948 years after the first Adam, and Israel was born 1948 years after the last Adam. So that's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
So very, very interesting. So anyway, and I put Job on here just to, when I teach the book of Job, I put him as living around this time frame, and that's kind of one of the oldest, it probably is the oldest book in our Bible, or at least the first written, because Moses wrote, you know, the first five books of our Bible after that. You know, so Moses would have been born down in here. I think what I was going to say about this chart that that's different than from my other chart. I think I think we can all relate to 4000 BC, but these are the same numbers. I forget what MD. It's another. If AD means something like Anno Domini, it means year of our Lord, right? But AMD is like from creation. It's 0 years from creation, or from the beginning, or something like that. So anyway, I just wanted you to see that this chart dates from Adam. So this was so this is saying the flood is 1656 AMD, and this chart has the flood at 2345 BC, but it's the same year. That's the whole point I was making. Anyway, there's just different ways to count years, I guess. after the flood and after this time of human government, God told the people to scatter and multiply on the face of the earth. Noah got a lot of the same commission as Adam. Remember, Adam was supposed to be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth. Well, God told Noah the same thing in Genesis 9, be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth. And instead of multiplying on the face of the earth, the whole world, it actually says that, if you can think of Genesis 1:1, Genesis 11, all the people became one people. So instead of scattering across the earth, they decided, well, we're just going to stay here in this city around Babylon, and we're going to build this tower to heaven. And it displeased God, and God says, let us go down and visit man and look upon what they're doing. And God was very displeased, and so that's what the word Babylon means, is confusion. So he confused their languages, and so then as they're building this tower, they can't communicate with each other, so that forced them to scatter. And so we call, to give it an F word, I call it the folly at Babel. They were being foolish and trying to build a tower to get to heaven, and people can speculate what that was. And but anyway, we look at that as a division, because now not everybody is of one language. It's not a one world thing. And today, to this day, there's 6,000 or 7,000 different languages, right? And it comes from this event where God actually did that.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
What about the different skin colors? I wonder how that came about. I'm not saying anything bad.
Yeah. So the different skin colors, I mean, some people think that Noah's three boys, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, had different skin colors, and we don't know, but we can trace where they went. And
well, somebody said, a preacher say something about that, and the same racist called it, that, mm-hmm. that he thought African Americans were descendants of Cain.
That is true. That's true. That's accurate. Because the Shemites became Jewish and Oriental. So you can kind of trace them. And the Hamites, this is where Canaan came from. I don't know, I'm not spelling that right. But at least twice in the Bible, Egypt is called the land of Ham. So we do know that the descendants of... we do know that the descendants of Ham went down into Egypt or Africa. And we also know that the descendants of Japheth went to Europe. And so they've become, you know, the white person. So those are your kind of your three colors, and those they came from those three boys.
Red, black, and that middle one.
Yeah. And this was maybe more the red.
Yellow.
And so some people think, you know, even the American Indian came because, you know, China, you know, go up in and they came down through Alaska and into America through that way. So
is it true that the black man, because of the sun in Africa, their skin is sharper?
Right. That's what I think.
Like he commanded to be fruitful and multiply. God commanded them to fill the whole earth, so he scattered them. So he scattered them in different directions. So kind of where they, their environment probably did help that.
Yeah, very good. And most of you know that...
did our term for pork come from that ham? Like, stay away from the Canaan, stay away from Egypt, stay away from the pork?
Maybe. That's a good thought. I didn't think of that. We've probably all have heard anti-Semitic, but the word Semitic comes from Shem. And it's a dialect of the Jewish language, Semitic. And so that's where, if you're anti-Jew, you're anti-Semitic. It goes back to their language. It goes back to Shem. And these are good questions. Thank you, guys. And that's one to think about, TJ, the Hamites.
Well, you answered our question. Stephen has been asked to me because my stepdad told me that.
Yeah.
And he was ordained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's good. So after this folly at Babel, if we were to look at back at this longevity chart, Abraham's dad is called Terah, and he came out of the Ur of the Chaldees. And so that's where Abraham, his family were idolaters in Babylon, and God called him out of the Ur of the Chaldees, and he came over to the Promised Land from Babylon. It's close to 800 miles to Israel from Babylon. And God gave him this promise that, you know, the place where your feet trod, I will give you that land. And so Abraham is called the friend of God. He's a very special and prominent person. So that's why they call this the age of promise, that God is going to bless them that bless you and your descendants, and he's going to curse you that curses you and your descendants. And that's why we as Americans are should be pro-Israel. We want to bless Israel so that we'll be blessed. So he's the, you know, called Father Abraham. And so that was the age of promise. But in time of famine, he went down to Egypt himself. And I'm trying to think. at the end of this 430 years, they found themselves down in Egypt. And that's where the story of the Ten Commandments and Moses began, was this... okay, I'm thinking about several things, but remember Jacob's son sold Joseph into slavery in Egypt. So that's how he ended up down there. And he finds himself in prison. He interprets Pharaoh's dreams. And he becomes a prominent person there. And then in time of famine, Jacob and his other sons come down. And so that they find themselves in Egypt. And after that Pharaoh dies that raised up Joseph out of slavery, he dies, and another Pharaoh comes up, it says, that does not know Joseph. And he begins to say, you know, these Israelites are getting to be a lot of people. If we don't, you know, put them under bondage, they're going to be more than us, and they're going to overtake us. So that's when they begin to make slaves out of the Egyptians. And in slavery and bondage, they cry out to God, and God brings them this deliverer called Moses. And Moses, after the 10 plagues, leads them up out of the land of Egypt, and through miracles, him and Aaron. And so that's where but we would look at that as a division too. The death of the firstborn, they were delivered out of bondage through the blood of the Lamb. That's why we make a division there. And so when we get to the New Testament, I know we're jumping over a lot of stuff, kind of for sake of time, but when Jesus is born in Bethlehem, the Jews are under the law. They're under the Old Testament law. So about three-fourths of our Bible is the law of Moses. About three-fourths of our Bible is the Old Testament. And so... So this is kind of getting into Matthew now, but between 606 and 587, that's when Nebuchadnezzar overtook. That was kind of the end of the Jewish being a nation, and it kind of entered into the times of the Gentiles, because now, you know, they left Egyptian bondage, but they're back in bondage under Babylon, and they carry them away in captivity. And then King Cyrus, you know, he tells them to go back and build their temple. So they're still under Gentile rulers. There's no more kings after this year. That's when the kingly line, remember, with Coniah, was ended until Jesus, and he is of that kingly line. So that's what Matthew's about. He's about the kingdom and the king, and King Jesus was legally the rightful heir to the throne, but he came as a servant, and he lived for approximately 33 years. And he died on the cross. That's why we have the big cross in the center of your handout.
Hey, Steve.
Yep.
But you know the story where he was taking Moses and was taking them through the where they were going. And through the wilderness. You know, God is faithful because all he did was bed. We don't have this. We don't have
this. They were high maintenance.
Wait a minute, can we say faithful.
That?
He was faithful. It was true, though. He was faithful to them.
They complained.
Until they started doing their crap with the fake gods and decided, well, we don't like it no more. And then he saw, and that proves his point when he says that he is faithful to us.
Yeah.
As long as we have faith in him.
Yeah. Amen.
You
That's
know,
very good.
God don't like to be used either.
Right. Right. Very good.
Well, it's true.
Yeah, that is true.
You would think that they would have learned after that.
You would think we would learn, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what 1 Corinthians 10 says, that they were examples for us. And so we do look at Israel as being, God kept delivering him and he was faithful, and they kept, going back to false gods. And so we kind of do the same thing. And so what I did on this chart here now, it took about 19 years. So it was around 587 that they went into Babylonian captivity, and they were never had a nation again until 1948. We said that Abraham was born 1948 years after Adam, and here the nation of Israel was kind of born again after 1940 years after Christ. And in 1967 is when they got kind of control of Jerusalem. So this is kind of interesting. So there's 19 years here and there's 19 years here. It's just kind of interesting how that worked out. But look now at Matthew 24. We're finally going to get to Matthew 24. And and somebody read verse 3 for us. Matthew 24:3.
And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world?"
Okay, so did everybody get a handout of this other handout? This is where I want to look at this other handout. I just didn't want you to...
We put ours back.
Okay. I just didn't want you to look at them while we were covering the other chart. Did everybody get one of these? Did you get one, Pat? He probably didn't get either one, maybe. So the disciples asked these three questions, and that's what I hope to answer here today. And this will, what do you need, Chuck? Well, I'm gonna give you the answers to your blanks. That's no problem. These three questions was, so they're asking him, because in verse 2, it says, "And Jesus said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." And so that was pretty startling to his disciples. So they asked this question privately. When shall these things be? What shall be the sign of thy coming? And what is the sign of the end of the world? And what I gave you there, the end of the world is essentially the end of an age. So if you want to put age in your blank, it's a period of time. Okay, I think the word time went in your blank. Time or age. And I gave you some cross references where sometimes the word world is translated, because just me growing up in church, when I think of the end of the world, I think it's the end of time, but it's actually the end of a certain time. But
A time period.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Pat. I was kind of stuck there. Thank you, brother. So he begins in these next few verses, and we've talked about this. Somebody read verse 7 if they would.
"For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places."
Yeah, so he begins kind of elaborating, when shall these things be? What's the sign of his coming? What's going to be the sign of the end of the world? And so he begins it, nation's going to rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, there's going to be famines, there's going to be pestilences. And when you think of pestilences, I had you put this in your blank, the word rats. And, I guess it's a bigger problem in our country than we think of. I guess rats in Chicago is a big problem. Rats in New York City is a big problem. And rats in Los Angeles. I've heard all three of those are just very terrible.
I've been talking a lot. I'm sorry. But my cousin Rosie, she went to Egypt. She told me that the rats are friends with the cats out there.
Really? Maybe they're too big for the cats to kill.
There's millions of them out there.
Wow.
But I'm a cat. It's called the first world cat.
But anyway, these are what I, when we think of pests or pestilences, you might think of, you know, critters and spreading of these things, and even earthquakes. We'll talk about that more in Revelation. And then this talks about false prophets and persecutions and offenses. And then in verse 11, it says that many false prophets shall rise and deceive many. And so in this next section, he tells them, don't be deceived, don't be troubled. And at the bottom of your front handout, you know, we can have peace. I put a little devotional thought in here. He's telling them, you know, he's telling his people, don't be troubled. There's all these things going on, but you can have peace. Can anybody say amen to that? You can have peace in trouble? Yeah, and we need that. All of us have a certain amount of trouble at any given day or any given time. And so we need peace in the middle of that. So the Lord's telling us, you know, don't be troubled. He's telling the Jews, don't take anything out of your house. And then he says to do flee into the mountains. And that's in verse, I turned two pages. We're still in verse chapter 24. Read 15 through 18, or not, yeah, 18, 15 through 18.
When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
You know where he says mountains there? Isn't that a direct reference to like the cliffs that line Sela Petra?
I think so. One place it translated it as wilderness. I had you put wilderness in your blank. But yeah, I think you're right. So they're going to flee to the mountains. They're going to flee to the wilderness. And so that's at the top of your back page, the back of your handout. I've had you put the word, the place is this wilderness. And it may, I know it says it in Revelation. Here it says flee to the mountains. So, and then, so I gave you a teaching point there on the back of your handout. Many will be deceived by the devil and his servants. There shall be an abundance of sin. Did everybody see verse 12? We didn't read verse 12, but, and because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. So this is one of the signs of the coming tribulation. You know, people love each other less. There's less love, and their love is going to wax cold because sin is so abundant. So on your handout, I just put, when this iniquity abounds, the love of many waxes cold, and a loveless world will produce a time of great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And that's verse 21. If you're still there, verse 21, somebody read verse 21 for us.
For then shall be great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, not nor ever shall be.
Thank you. So That's this great tribulation. And so, I don't know if you can look at your handout and this chart that I gave you, but I call this the sign of the end of the world. That's whenever this abomination of desolation stands in the holy place. So, and again, this is just me thinking about this. So, I could be wrong, but I believe he is answering his disciples' earnest question, what's the sign of your coming? What's the sign of the end of the world? When are these things going to happen? So this answers the last question. And so what happens here is that wicked man of sin, the son of perdition, he sits in the temple of God showing himself that he is God. It's in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrificing and oblation, sacrifice and the oblation to cease. This is this is one I may have changed a little bit, but this may be when the 144,000 Jewish male virgins with God's seals in their foreheads go to every nation and kindred, tongue, and people with the everlasting gospel. And we're right here in Matthew. Notice in verse 14, Matthew 24:14, and this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. So that's partly why I call this the sign of the end of the world, because he says when the gospel goes to every nation, then the end shall come. So that's what I put the sign there. And I don't know if you can see that. This box here is things that happen in this 7-year tribulation period in my timeline. I tried to make a break in the timeline to show the Matthew 24 and this tribulation period. So I don't know if you can read across the bottom, but this is the 7-year tribulation period. It's called those days or Daniel's 70th week. It's a time of trouble. And I even put the shadow of death. So this is 7 years with the thing in the middle, 3.5 years on each side of it. So hopefully this is following Matthew 24 and... Yeah.
That every dispensation ends in failure.
Mm-hmm.
That there shows that our dispensation is going to end in failure because we don't take the gospel
yes.
to the world, and
yeah.
they take the gospel in the tribulation.
Yes, that's it. That's it. So I didn't give you this one, but essentially, Christ's death on the cross.
Sure.
You know, he says it is finished. Well, what is it that's finished? Well, his work was finished, but also that dispensation was finished. They're no longer under the law. He fulfilled the law. So now it's the age of grace. And so that's what Pat's saying, that this dispensation ends with the rapture of the church. And yeah, the start of the tribulation and the rapture of the church.
We think that is a good thing, but it's just a sign of our failure.
Yeah, right. Right. You're right. That is right. Every dispensation ends with a failure. Now, for sake of time, let's look over at verse 32. Somebody read verse 32 if they would.
Verse 1 and 2 is good too, Steve, just if they want to look back later.
Yeah, let's go on over to 32. Tracy, why don't you read 32 for us?
Now, learn a parable of the fig tree. When this branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is nigh.
Yeah, so when it says know that it's nigh or it's near, This is what I call the sign of the fig tree is his answer to when shall these things be. The question was when shall these things be, and this is kind of how he answers it. Well, when the fig tree puts forth his green leaves. So back here in Jeremiah, the fig leaf faded, it says. And now Jesus is giving this sign, and we know that Israel's connected with the fig tree. And
well, what's that actually mean?
Well, so what we would say, Tracy, is that I think it says it right after you in verse 34. Let's read 33 and 34. So likewise ye, when ye shall see these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. So what we would probably say that either 1948 or 1967, Israel is putting forth her green leaves. She is becoming this nation again. So the generation that sees these things are going to be the generation when the Lord returns. So that, but we don't know how long a generation is, right? It's anywhere from 40 years to 100 years. That's kind of the people that the Israelites that wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, they were called a generation. And I forget where the one is that says 100 years is a generation. I think it's with Abraham. So anywhere from 40 to 100 years after one of these dates.
And a lot of us were born in that time frame.
Yeah. That's why they say they wrote the book 88 Reasons Why Christ Comes Back in 1988 is because it was 40 years after 48 was 88.
And maybe that's why the Jews keep saying that he hasn't came yet.
Mm-hmm. It is a little bit interpretation what the term fig tree means and putting forth his leaves. But anyway, that
tree is has always been their national sign.
Yeah,
it's even on their flag, right? Am I right?
It is on some of the. I know the dove with the fig leaf. I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a Jewish friend though, and he would say, "What is your God? Your God?" To allow these things.
Huh. Okay. Well, I do have a. I talk to Jewish friends who kind of shut me out too. So, so those are two of the signs. And then I'm going to wrap up here. Let's look at this third sign. Look at verse 29. It was right before that. 29 and 30. Somebody read 29 and 30 of chapter 24.
Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the man, or the son of man, in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the son of man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and glory.
Right. And so I call this a cosmic sign, if you want to put that in your blank. And this is what I think happens. This answers their third question. What is the sign of your coming? The sun's darkened and the stars don't give their light. And I think some of that happens right before the day of the Lord comes. That's how I look at those things. Do you have one more blank or two more? Just do you have two? Just one. I think that word salvation is just on yours, honey. I kind of messed that up. I was hoping to get into this a little bit more, but look at verse 36. And let me read this, and then we'll close out here. But of the day and the hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. And so I gave you on your Roman numeral 5 on your handout these times and seasons before the flood. There were some things about nature that pointed that are going to be similar to the second coming. Some things about prophecy. Nobody knows the day and the hour, but we can know the times and the seasons. There's some things about just their carnality, that they were eating and drinking. Even some things about the government. And I put the Tower of Babel with one world government, one language, and they were of one religion. If you want to put religion in your last blank. And so that these are things that I think are going to be like the end of the... What are you saying?
I'm sorry. In verse 22, it talks about the faithful people will be quick for us. So we'll still be protected, the ones that have been saved.
Yeah, they're shortened.
Isn't that what that means?
Well, I think it's a direct reference to Israel, that God's going to shorten the time, or else nobody would even survive.
That's what it's not painful, and it's quick.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Because, you know, I'm not a survivalist. I can't do it.
Right.
I'm not
either. Right. So my teaching point at the end there, Noah was a preacher of righteousness in a time of great wickedness, but God kept him and his family, a remnant, safe through those days and through the flood. So let's not let the cares of this life snare us and allow us that day to come up on us unawares. So anyway, I know we kind of had to rush that at the end there, but hopefully it's a little bit big picture, and after that, you know, the fury at Armageddon. So things after are not like before. So when he comes back at Armageddon, it's going to make a 1,000-year millennium. And then at the end, the devil's released for a short season, and we call it the finale at Jerusalem. So anyway, that's a little bit at the end of... We might bring this chart out again at the end of Revelation. So I know you probably got questions, and thank you for... Anyway, let's wrap up there. I know we're late. Jaime, why don't you dismiss us today, brother?
Heavenly Father, thank you this day for having us here today and learning about more of your word, and our mind and heart to open to this word, to Steve and to everybody here this morning. And let us have a good day at worship this morning at the main service. And